Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm your host for this evening, Robert Houghton, and tonight I'm pleased to announce that we have author Robert Tuccio on the line to discuss his new book, The Pre-Tribulation Rapture Exposed. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Rob, Rob's been a long-time listener to the Hour of the Time, and much more than that, he's been a regular contributor of research materials. His research contributions have been included in dozens of Hour of the Time broadcasts over the years, including Bill Cooper's most sought-after broadcasts, the Mystery Babylon series. So since those days, Robert has continued his research into the mystery schools, New Age religions. He's also dabbled in the psychology of mass murderers, and he continues to expose those in his research who would corrupt religion to achieve their own selfish ends. Now back few years ago now, Rob was a month-long guest of the Hour of the Time when he was down in the Arizona studios with Doyle Shamley, and they did an exciting 23-episode series where he shared his research exposing New Age churches and showing their mystery school connections. So tonight we're going to be talking to him about his new book, The Pre-Tribulation Rapture Exposed. So we'll be right back right after this short musical break.
How could you have been so blind? the Father's phone, the demon's dying, the Son has come, and you've been left behind. You've been left behind. You've been left behind.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and I'd like to thank you all for tuning in to the Hour of the Time this evening. It's been a while since we've done a program here, and I'm actually very excited about being able to talk with Rob Tuccio this evening about his new book, The Pre-Tribulation Rapture Exposed. Now, I gave you a little bit of his history before, and are you there, Rob?
I'm here, Rob. Yep.
All right. Well, you know, oftentimes we go to a musical break at the beginning of the show, and I thought that... that I Wish We'd All Been Ready song was quite appropriate. So what do you think about that one?
It's an old song. Larry Norman, I think, did that for the those movies, the Thief in the Night movies, all those movies back in the 70s.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a, it's actually quite a frightening song if you, you know, were to sit down and think about it for a while. That everybody's going to be gone, all the Christians will be gone, and we'll all be left behind. And I guess that ties into that Left Behind series as well, that that was out, but I guess we'll get into all that kind of stuff later.
Okay.
You know, Rob, it's been an, I've actually been very blessed to be able to have you as a personal friend, and of course, the listeners won't know, but Rob and I do chat quite often on the phone, I would say at least a couple of times a month, and, you know, about various topics, things that are in the news, like the Newtown mass murder, and things like that that happened in your neck of the woods, and on to some other even more trivial things that you and I banter back and forth about in our personal calls. But, you know, it's great to have you here in a professional capacity tonight talking about your new book. So,
thanks, Rob.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to have you. I think maybe we should start with what actually is the rapture. So there's a lot of people maybe that didn't grow up in Protestant churches that maybe don't even have a clue what this rapture thing is all about. So could you maybe just give us a brief definition about what the rapture is?
Yeah, the rapture in using in Protestant eschatology or in belief in end times, they believe that Jesus is going to come and Christians will disappear from the earth before a tribulation period. And there's differences in, you know, what the rapture is, different time periods, just pre-tribulation rapture, mid-trib, post-trib, there's even pre-wrath rapture, and, you know, they all different, have different timings of when they're just going to be before, what a lot of people believe it's going to be a seven-year tribulation period, and that's usually the pre-trib rapturist, what they believe, and the, you know, the book I wrote was mainly refuting the idea of a pre-tribulation rapture.
Okay, but the rapture itself involves Jesus coming back to earth and taking the Christians away, or what, how does that work?
Yeah, well, they, the pre-trib, what they believe that this will happen when the rapture takes place without warning, the bodies of all believers who have died since the day of Pentecost will suddenly be transformed into new living, immortal, resurrected bodies.
Okay.
They believe that this new body will be joined together with the person's spirit, which Jesus will bring with him. Then the bodies of those who have likewise accepted Christ as their Savior and are alive at the moment will also be instantly translated into new immortal bodies, and together all believers will be instantly transported to heaven to meet the Lord. And that's, I guess, a basic belief of what the rapture is, and again, that's coming from Tim LaHaye.
Okay.
He's big with the Left Behind series, and, you know, they believe in the pre-trib rapture. Like Hal Lindsey.
The Left Behind series was, I guess, an originally a book set that, that he had released?
Yeah, I think it was back when the 90s, back in the 90s they came out with it. And then it was made into a movie with Kirk Cameron was in it.
Oh, Kirk Cameron, yeah.
A series of, I don't know, 10 books or 13 books, something like that. And it was, each book was about the he was left behind, and he wasn't a Christian. Then he became a Christian in tribulation period. Kirk Cameron's character, and you know, it talks about the Antichrist, and you know what happens to people who get saved here, what they call the tribulation saints during the tribulation period.
Okay, so I guess then maybe the next. So we have a definition of the rapture in the fact that Jesus returns to earth. Returns to the clouds at least, and takes up the souls of the dead first, and then the souls of the living, or the actual physical bodies of the living as well, and these people actually physically disappear off the planet. This is the belief?
That's the belief of the rapture, yes.
Okay. Now, then let's talk about the tribulation period. So I guess the timing of all these events is what you're trying to sort out in this book. And What you're attempting to refute, and I believe you do so in a very effective way, is that before this tribulation period occurs, the rapture will not occur, according to biblical predictions, at least.
Right.
So the tribulation itself, can you give us maybe an idea about what the tribulation is?
Yeah, the tribulation, what really they believe in, they call it the time of Jacob's trouble. And they get that from the Old Testament. They believe that there's going to be a 7-year tribulation period.
7 years? Okay.
That it's going to be a rapture, and then the 7-year tribulation period. That's what pre-tribbers believe. It's a 7-year tribulation period. And they got a lot of that from the book of Daniel. I don't have specific verses in the Daniel, but they talk about Daniel's 70 years, 70 weeks, and it's really 490 years, and they believe it's really the time where God deals with Israel.
Okay.
They believe there's two covenants. There's one for Israel after the flesh, and there's a second covenant for Christians after the Spirit, according to the Spirit, where Christians disappear. God's done with the church because they escaped the pre-trib rapture, and now God deals with Israel during the 7-year tribulation period. You know, they really split the covenant, where the covenant is really has to do with now it's focused on Israel, and Israel has to get saved, and you know everyone's being judged by the Antichrist, and you know, but they also believe that people get saved in the tribulation period, and they say those people really aren't a part of the church, the body of Christ. There's a separate class called the tribulation saints, and I get into that in the book.
Okay.
The idea of that too.
So I guess in like what we're looking at here is that the Jews have rejected Christ as their savior.
Right.
And
right.
And this tribulation period comes around to, it's a punishment against the Jews mostly, or is this a whole world event?
Well, a whole world event. A lot of them believe it's God's testing them to become faithful, to get saved, to follow, you know, accept Christ as their Savior. And some, there's different opinions on what God does to Israel, what he allows them to happen to Israel. Some people believe there's a separate covenant that they make with the Antichrist, and they won't be persecuted. They believe that temple is going to be rebuilt again, and eventually will be destroyed by the Antichrist. And some of them place that in the midway point. That has to do with the midway point where everyone recognizes the Antichrist is completely evil, and then he starts persecuting everyone at the midway point. You know, that has to do with the two witnesses in the book of Revelation that he kills, and they rise again from the dead, and they believe that has to do with the midway point. But I believe that at that point, the two witnesses, when they rise from the dead, it has to do with post-trib rapture, which is really at the end of this tribulation period. That's what my belief is, and I explain that in the book.
Okay. So what are some of the Bible verses that these pre-tribulation rapture people would use to support their belief?
A lot of them is the 1 Corinthians, and I got to go back. What I have to explain is that they believe that the second coming of Jesus is in two phases.
Okay.
They believe that the first phase is when Jesus comes secretly for Christians in the pre-tribulation rapture, before the tribulation period, the 7-year tribulation period. He comes secretly and he takes Christians away.
That's, how can that be? Like, How can that be a secret if...
And then they believe that the second phase has to do with when Jesus physically comes back with those people at the end of the tribulation period. That's when he judges the Antichrist. He throws Satan into the pit for 1,000 years. And that's what they believe, that there's, you know, a two phases here where, you know, he secretly comes and then physically comes where everyone sees him at the end of the tribulation period.
Okay.
One of the verses they use is 1 Corinthians 15:51-57, and I don't know if you want me to read this whole passage here, but it believes that in a moment, in a twinkling of the eye, at the last trumpet, the trumpet will sound and the dead will be raised incorruptible and we shall be changed. And if you look at it, there's nothing in really the verses to declare that this moment in a twinkling of an eye is a separate event apart from the second coming of Christ.
Okay.
If you go back to verses 20 to 26 in Revelation 15,
Corinthians,
death is going to be destroyed. And if you look at the whole passage 20 to 26 and 51 to 57 in 1 Corinthians 15, it talks about Christ is, you know, destroying death. There is an absence of a double coming of Christ called pre-tribulation rapture if you look at the context. And again, double coming means that Christ comes first in the pre-tribulation rapture and then in his second coming after the 7-year tribulation. But the order that Paul gives is Christ is raised, which has already happened.
Okay, yep.
At that time. And then after this, those of Christ will be raised. And then when will all this happen? It happens at his second coming, which is then comes the end where it destroys death, which is at the end of this tribulation period.
Okay.
Verse 52 says we will be changed at the last trumpet. And so when does this last trumpet occur? It occurs at his second coming and then comes the end. So you see, the only way the verses 51 to 57 of chapter 15 could be interpreted to refer to a separate event, which is called the pre-tribulation rapture, is if one were to come to those verses with that idea, if you already have that belief.
Right, okay.
And I go into the idea of, you know, everything, second coming and the rapture is at the end of the tribulation period. That's what the book, what I really wrote the book for, that it's really at the end of the tribulation period. Another verse is 1 Thessalonians 4:13-17, where it talks about, I won't read the whole verse, but those who are asleep will rise, and it talks about the trumpet again, and mentions those who are alive and remain will come. The Lord will descend with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trump of God, and then we who are alive and remain shall be taken. But if you
look, so this is once again talking about an event that's happening, but you know, how are they saying that this is going to happen? You know, how are they splitting this event up, I guess, is the question that you're answering in the book, or at least trying to, you know, formulate a decent answer for. So yeah, go ahead again with the First Thessalonians comments you were making.
Yeah, no, if you look at First Thessalonians 5:1-10, which is a continuation of verses 13-17.
Okay.
It talks about the thief and the night, and I won't get into it, the peace and safety will come upon him and sudden destruction and basically the fact that Paul starts his verse of chapter 15 with the word but shows, again, it's a continuation of chapter 4. So
okay.
we have the last trumpet in 1 Corinthians 15:52, which coincides with the last trumpet of 1 Thessalonians 4:16. I believe it's clear in the Bible that that's the same trumpet.
Okay, the last trumpet, right?
Yeah, there has to be a number of last days trumpet in order for there to be a last one.
Right.
There's a number of trumpets that are found in Revelation chapter 8, and it talks about there's seven trumpets. Revelation 8:6-11 to chapter 11, verse 15. So pre-tribbers want us to believe that Jesus is coming at the sounding of the first last day trumpet, and then they add seven more trumpets to it. So I'm saying that the seventh trumpet in Revelation and the trumpets in 1 Corinthians 15 and 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 is the same trumpet when the rapture happens at the end of the tribulation period. So they believe it happens, okay, it happens at the last trumpet, which is the first trumpet, but then there's six, okay, there's more trumpets, that doesn't make sense.
Right, the last trumpet is the last trumpet, right?
Yeah, I mean, it says last trumpet. Why there's six more according to Revelation? So again, 1 Corinthians 15, 52 says that we will be changed at the last trumpet. In 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 says we will be changed or raised with the trumpet. This has to be the same trumpet in these verses. You can't have a last day trumpet and then have one or seven more after that one. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So we will be raised at his second coming with the last trumpet, and then comes the end. So if they look at 1 Corinthians 4, 16, 17 and say that Jesus will come back secretly and silently for Christians, where they will disappear with Christ before the tribulation. But looking at verse 16 of 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, it says Christ will come with a shout, and there will be trumpet. So if he comes secretly and silently, then how come Jesus is going to blow a trumpet where everyone's going to hear it? That doesn't make any sense.
Like,
so a shout and a trumpet are loud, so Christ can't come. He can't come silently. He can't come secretly because it says all eyes will see him.
Right.
And then Jesus will not come secretly because in Matthew 24, verses 30 to 31, which is the same event in 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 to 17, says in verse 30 that all the tribes of the earth will mourn and shall see the Son of Man coming in a cloud. So all eyes will see him when Christ comes in verse 31, and there's a great sound of a trumpet, which obviously can't be silent. So 1 Thessalonians 4, chapters 13 and 17, 1 Corinthians 15, 20-26, fits in with what Jesus says in Matthew 24, verses 3-13. That's a huge passage. I don't read that, but basically it's possible asking the three questions: when will the end come, and when will we sign it coming? And he says,
and at this point we're talking about the words of Christ in red, right? Like,
yeah, yep.
Okay.
And he talks them at the end of the tribulation. He tells them all these things that come, earthquakes, and these are the beginning of sorrows and stuff. The verse 14 in Matthew 24 is really a key, I believe, of understanding the order that's going to happen here. And in that verse, you don't see a double coming mentioned, but we see at the end will come when all the events in verses 3 to 13 of Matthew 24 and the preaching of the gospel in verse 14 happen first. So why are Christians looking for Christ during the tribulation period? The answer is because they're still here. You know,
right, okay. And that's not maybe the new Christians that have just turned to Christ. That seems to include everybody it paints everybody with the same brush. Christians.
Right.
Yeah. So why do the pre-tribs say the rapture is in two stages then? Is there any biblical proof to show that?
I don't know why they believe it. I think I do know why. They believe that because I don't think they understand, they don't want to believe that we're going to suffer persecution in the world. I think we're going to escape all this stuff.
They say that Christians will escape the tribulation and we won't face God's wrath because we've made our decision ahead of time. Is that correct?
Right. I think it comes out with they don't really understand persecution or tribulation. They do use verses, and I explain a lot of them in the book about we will escape all these things. See, they believe that what it comes down to is that the tribulation period is God's wrath.
Okay, that's what you're right. Okay.
On mankind. But I show in the book plenty of verses where it's not the wrath of God. It's really whoever this world leader is going to be, Antichrist, Maitreya, some believe it's going to be the last pope or whatever.
Right, okay.
So it's going to be this world leader, the Antichrist, which is what Christians call him, Antichrist. But I believe that it's Antichrist or this world leader's wrath on the world. You know, really, it's against not just Christians, it's really anyone who doesn't follow the, you know, New World Order system. Basically, any religion, any belief. Of course, Christians are going to be persecuted greatly. But I show in the, I believe in the book that it's specifically in the book of Revelation, too, it talks about God's wrath is really later on in the trumpets and vials at the end of the tribulation period. So we escape that wrath when he comes back.
Okay.
That's the wrath. But they believe that the whole tribulation period, you know, we have to escape God's wrath. You know, and if you look at in the Old Testament where they had to put the blood on their doorposts in order for God to not be killed.
You're referring to the Passover?
Yeah, the firstborn son.
Right.
That's
during the plagues of Egypt, I believe, correct?
Yeah. And they had to, you know, it was God's wrath because they were unholy and they were going to take the firstborn son and stuff. So, but those people didn't escape the world in any kind of rapture. Yeah, they were protected through it by God. God protected his own because they followed God's judgment, but they didn't escape the world in the tribulation period, and that's what I believe it's here. Yeah, we're going to be persecuted, but it's Antichrist's wrath. It's the wrath of God comes upon, not us, it comes upon the unsaved at the end of the tribulation period. And this is what I explain in the book in detail.
Now, why would the pre-tribulation people be so adamant about this fact? Like, I'm finding now. I've read the book, and I grew up in a church that did, in fact, believe in the pre-tribulation rapture. But you know, why is there a problem with believing that? Like, does it really matter whether I believe it's going to happen before or after? Like, what differences are there going to be for me as a Christian if I believe in the pre-trib rapture? Like, what dangers are there in believing in a pre-trib rapture?
Oh, I think the shock of that we're not really what's going to happen in the world is going to happen. You know, if there's going to be a one-world government and new world order, you know, they believe they're going to escape all that where they don't have to prepare for anything like that. Well, if
so
I'm
it
God,
really is. It really does boil down to a preparedness thing. It's like, well, if God's going to come and save me, why would I bother even fighting any of this stuff?
Yeah, right. It's like I believe it it neutralizes Christians, really. It, you know, if we're really against what's coming and is the socialist New World Order, then how can we're the one of the people? If you're a Christian, you're really against that. You know, how can you believe that we can't do anything to expose that or refute it or even try to stop what's happening with, you know, all these federal laws that are being passed, you know, now we have all these gun control laws and stuff. You know,
why would I fight it? Because I'm not going to be here to worry about it anyway.
Yeah, I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to be here to face that. So I'm going to disappear. And I grew up with this theology. I went to Pentecostal churches. I believe in the preacher rapture because that's what was taught. And you never study any other viewpoint, you know, until I actually read the Bible for myself instead of just listening what the preacher says. You know?
So when did this first occur? Like, when did these ideas that a pre-trib rapture was, that timing of this event, when did these ideas first come to the forefront in Protestant churches, or at least in several Protestant churches?
What I believe is it first took place in the 1800s, is the first appearance. And
okay,
still,
so this is a fairly recent idea.
Right, it happened in the 1800s, and they'll say that the pre-tribbers will say that it's really it was taught in the, I mean, of course, they, besides the Bible being taught in the New Testament, they say, well, they gave all these proofs of that it happened with early church writers and the church fathers and appeared in that. But, you know, what I explain in the book first is I believe that, you know, if you want to refute the doctrine of the pre-trib rapture, you have to use verses from the Bible to refute it. You know, they try to say, well, this first century writer wrote it, and it appeared in, you know, the Nicene Fathers, the anti-Nicene Fathers, and, you know, but if you want to prove a doctrine, you got to prove it from the Bible. You can't prove it from some pseudo Ephraim guy they use and say that he wrote it. Yes, so, but even if he did teach that, is it taught in the Bible? And if you want to get into the origins of what I believe it first appeared, I could get into that real quick.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know how this, you know, came about, because it has been extremely popular, especially in the mass media recently. And of course, we've seen the sham doctrines of people like Harold Camping, for example, that have calculated a date and said it's going to happen now, and it didn't happen. And then he said, okay, well, my math was wrong, and it's going to happen now. And he's tried to define this as something that's absolutely imminent. This could happen any day now. And while he made a mistake the first time in his calculations, and obviously the second time in his calculations, he believed it was, you know, this is an imminent thing, that any day now, this pre-tribulation rapture is going to happen. And I know we'll get into a little later about how in your book you show that there are several events that have to happen before the rapture can occur. But, let's get back into a little bit about how this particular idea, you know, gained strong roots in the Protestant system.
Okay. You know, I believe the first appearance of the secret rapture with Christians taking out of the world is said to be around 1830.
Okay.
There was a girl named Margaret MacDonald who lived in Port Glasgow in Scotland. She had a vision or a revelation of the end times, where she believed there was going to be a catching up of certain spirit-filled believers and other Christians who did not have a fullness of spirit-filling would not be caught up. So she did not say that all Christians would be caught up before the wicked. She calls the Antichrist wicked.
Okay.
Wicked is revealed. But she did teach and believe in a secret rapture catching up with certain believers. Now, there was another man by the name of Robert Norton, who was a member of the Catholic Apostolic Church led by a man named Edward Irving. And there are two books by Robert Norton called Memoirs of James and George MacDonald of Port Glasgow in 1840. And it appeared on his books in page 171 to 176. And the other book that he wrote was The Restoration of Apostles and Prophets in the Catholic Apostolic Church in 1870, appeared on pages 15 through 18.
Okay.
And the MacDonald family in the spring of 1830 was said to have been performing miracles of healing and to be speaking in tongues. And a lot of this stuff was appearing in the 1800s. According to McPherson, and this is, I'm talking about Dave McPherson, and he was one of the first who dug and found these two books by Norton. Margaret MacDonald's vision or revelation of a secret rapture was not a result of her speaking in tongues. In other words, the vision or revelation was not an interpretation of speaking in tongues, but just a vision or a revelation she had. The tongue speaking was separate from the vision or revelation, and the pre-trib doctrine of the rapture did not begin in an utterance of tongues from her or anyone else. And McDavid McPherson says that she had her pre-tribulation rapture before she even spoke in tongues. And this is really the first time that anyone discussed the two stages of the second coming of Christ, where here we see the distinction between that final stage of the Lord's coming, when every eye shall see him in his prior appearing in glory to them that look for him. So the Irvingites were, they took copies of MacDonald's vision, and Irvingites were also known as the Catholic Apostolic Church.
Can you say that again? What kind of church?
It's called the Catholic Apostolic Church.
Okay.
Or they just call themselves the Irvingites, and Edward Irving, and he took from her doctrines and started teaching it. And I won't read her belief is really long, this revelation she had. And she says stuff like, now will the wicked be revealed with all power and signs and lying wonders, that if it were possible, very likely will be deceived. It's in the book. It's really long. But basically what she says is that there would be certain Christians who are spirit-filled believers, and those are the ones who are going to be raptured before this wicked Antichrist comes. But then the others will be left behind. So she really taught a partial rapture. She didn't believe all the Christians would be deceived, but I guess if you're falling away, if you don't have a spirit filled inside you, you're going to be left behind and face this wicked. The others will disappear. Edward Irving, again, he was the founder of the Catholic Apostolic Church. He was a friend of men such as Thomas Carlyle, Henry German, and Samuel Coleridge. He also became involved in speaking in tongues, healing, and prophecy. In 1826, Irving translated Spanish Jesuit priest Manuel de Lacunza's 1812 book, The Coming of Messiah in Glory and Majesty, in English. He translated it in English. Lacunza wrote this book under the pseudonym of Juan Josephat Ben Ezra, and in it he believed that there was going to be coming of the Antichrist that would not be a person, but would he believed would be a corrupt Roman Catholic priesthood. Lacunza is in the caution that the shout, voice of the archangel, and trumpet of God will occur much before his arrival at earth. Harley runs with two-stage raptures, and especially since he tried in these First Thessalonians 4 aspects with the time when the Lord returns from heaven to the earth. So Lacunza believed that the church would be on earth until the time of the judgments accompanying the return of Christ in glory to set up his kingdom.
Okay.
So basically, Irving somehow twisted these beliefs to use it for the pre-tribulation origin, the doctrine beliefs. That's what Irving did. He published a periodical called The Morning Watch. And in September 1830 issue, there was an article written by someone using the name of Fidus, who mentioned the pre-tribulation rapture and believed that the seven churches of Revelation were seven stages of the church age. And again, this is a feature of dispensationalism, where they believe that the seven churches of Revelation had seven time periods or seven ages, and we're supposedly in the church of Laodicea now. We're the end time church.
The lukewarm church, yes.
Yeah, then we're, you know, and if you go back to it, there's so many different opinions of when these time periods start. It's like, well, what is it? You know, how do you know it ends and begins at this point? You know, I talk about that in a book. I believe it's not time periods. And that word dispensation, if you look it up in a dictionary, really has nothing to do with time at all. It has to do with bringing forth something. But they had, you know, I believe the church today could have all those characteristics in those churches of Revelation today. But anyway, he talked about the Laodicean church, and what Fidus is saying is that the Great Tribulation will intervene or occur in the event of the coming of the Lord to the air and the establishment of his throne in rest in Zion. So in other words, the order Fidus is giving will be the coming of the Lord to the air, or pre-tribulation rapture, the period of the Great Tribulation, and then the establishment of his throne and rest in Zion, which is at the end of the seven-year pre-tribulation period. In Baxter, again, this is Robert Baxter. He went into London in the fall of 1831. He visited some prayer meetings, which preceded the manifestation in Irving Church and was a regular attendant at Irving services. He then became endowed with prophetic utterances and had a number of personal revelations. Later, when certain prophecies were made by him and others simply were not fulfilled, he became disillusioned and felt that he had been deceived and that he had deceived others. So he started to change his beliefs after he believed in deceiving people. He writes, an opinion had been advanced in some of Mr. Irving's writings that before the second coming of Christ and before the setting in upon the world of the day of vengeance, emphatically so-called in the scriptures, the saints would be caught up to heaven like Enoch and Elijah and would be thus saved from the destruction of this world as Noah was saved in the ark and Lot was saved from Sodom. This was an opinion I never could entertain, conceiving as I did that our refuge in and through the days of vengeance would be some earthly sanctuary until the Lord should come, the dead be raised, and those remaining alive should be caught up.
So they actually, was it back in these days when they talked about, you know, parallels with Noah's flood and him being in the ark and him being saved? Because you mentioned Lot's escape from Sodom and Gomorrah, and they were back in these times claiming that these are symbols offering a parallel to the pre-tribulation rapture? Is this what they were interpreting?
Yeah, they say that Noah's flood was a symbol of the future rapture because God told Noah that he was going to destroy the world through the flood. And so he told him to build the ark and, you know, that they would escape the world through this ark, and it was God's wrath, so they're escaping God's wrath. So that's a symbol of the preacher rapture. And the same thing with Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot was destroyed. You know, that's when Lot's wife turned around. She was turned to a pillar of salt because she didn't, listen. And that's when God rains fire on Sodom and Gomorrah and stuff. But I believe that it's not really I explained this in the book too. That it's not really. It's a symbol of a preacher rapture because if you look in those verses, and I don't have them on hand right now, but
that's okay.
In what happened at the end of those verses is they were all destroyed. You see, so if everyone was destroyed in Noah's flood, no one was here, then it can't be a preacher rapture because according to preacher rapture, Christians disappear, the wrath of God comes. Those people disappear, but then there's still people here on earth to face God's so-called wrath.
Right.
But I believe it's a poster because if you're taken, if Christians are taken away, and God destroys all the wicked, then there's no one's going to be here. And I believe that's why it's the end of the tribulation period because no one will be here. Everyone will be facing God's wrath and judgment at the end of the tribulation period, at the time of the judgment of, dead and alive, all the unsaved will be judged. That's why I believe it's poster, because if all is destroyed, like Noah's day, then how can, no one's going to be here? It's a poster rapture. Same thing with Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know what, Rob, I think it's a good time for us to take a break here, and we'll just go to a quick musical break, and we'll come back and maybe talk about the fact that I'm trying to think of the two people working in the fields, that verse, where Jesus says that he's coming at an hour when we don't expect him.
Okay, and, we can talk about Baxter, and we can get into John Darby if you want. He was the one who made it hugely famous, and then Schofield if you still want to get into.
Yeah, I would actually prefer if we could talk about that a little bit more. So let's just go for a quick musical break here, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Hour of the Time here on www.hourofthetime.com. All right, Rob. Well, I'm not sure if you've ever heard that song before, but that's by a Canadian band called Prism, and that was Armageddon. Very interesting little rock and roll theatrical piece. But before we went to the break, you were just finishing up, I guess, with Baxter and his ideas, and you'd mentioned to me here while we were listening to that song that maybe you'd talk a little bit about Darby and Schofield, and we got about maybe 12 minutes left for the program today, so I think it sounds like, from the looks of things here, we're going to have to do another hour, which was absolutely fine by me, and we can talk about your book more, but maybe before you get into Baxter, Darby, and Schofield, we should talk about how people can actually buy this book if they're interested in getting it. Now, this book is a self-published book in conjunction with Hour of the Time and Veritas Research Consulting. If you're interested in getting this book, are there still any hardcovers available, Rob?
Yeah, I think I only sold about 10 so far, so I got plenty of hardcovers left.
Okay, so there's plenty of hardcovers left. They're $50 postpaid in the United States of America, $55 to Canada, and $70 for the rest of the world. So those are signed, hand-numbered hardcover first editions, and we have 65 of those available. So I guess right now there's about 55 or 54 left.
Yeah, around that.
And if you'd like to get a hold of that hardcover, you can send an email to Rob. And Rob, what is your email?
That's rl2co at yahoo.com.
That's rl2co at yahoo.com. Okay. And if you're not interested in a hardcover, we also have, of course, the soft covers, and the soft cover first edition is available for $25 postpaid within the United States of America, continental U.S., $30 to Canada, and $35 for the rest of the world. So Rob takes cash, check, or money orders, and you can email those you can snail mail those directly to Rob, and that's Robert Tuccio, R-O-B-E-R-T, T-U-C-C-I-O, and his P.O. Box is P.O. Box 77, Derby, Connecticut. That's D-E-R-B-Y-C-T, and the zip code there is 06418. So if you're interested in getting a hardcover and you'd like that signed personally to you, do send an email to Rob at rl2co at yahoo.com. And let him know maybe who you'd like that book signed to, if it's for a friend or for yourself. And then forward up with a cash, check, or money order directly to Rob at Robert Tuccio, P.O. Box 77, Derby, Connecticut, 06418. And if you have any questions about maybe getting a case of those for your church or friends and family, you can email Rob once again at rl2co at yahoo.com, and he'd be happy to give you the bulk rates for that book as well. So, okay, Rob, let's get back into what we were discussing. And we were just finishing up basically the origins of where this pre-tribulation rapture doctrine came from. You were talking about Baxter, and then you said you'd move on to Darby and Schofield as well.
Okay. So this Baxter, he changed his position from post-trib to pre-trib when he had a conviction while attending Edward Irving's church, as did his wife, but he later changed back to being a post-trib when he left the Irvingites.
Okay.
One of the chief financial supporters of Edward Irving's movement was a banker and politician, Henry Drummond, who was the eldest son of a prominent London banker. And later, there's a group known as the Brethren, or the Plymouth Brethren, which adopted MacDonald's and ideas of a secret rapture. And the group was led by a man named John Darby.
Okay.
He heard about the strange occurrences of the MacDonald family in 1830 and visited the family in the same year. Pre-tribbers often set different dates as to when Darby taught the preacher rapture, made him say that he taught in 1829 to distance Darby from the revelations of MacDonald in 1830 and later teachings of Irving's in order to say that Darby caught the creature rather first, and then he received it from the Lord before MacDonald and Edward Irving.
Now, was that what's commonly known now as the Brethren Church?
Yeah, the Plymouth Brethren, what the denomination, the Plymouth Brethren is.
Okay. I was just curious about that.
As a side note, if anyone knows the mystery religions, Aleister Crowley and his family, his father was big in the Plymouth Brethren.
Oh, really?
It's an interesting side note. Yeah, he grew up in that doctrine of the pre-trib rapture, and his father, I don't know if he was a minister, but he had an ale company, a liquor company, and they were big in the Plymouth Brethren, and his mother later called Crowley the Great Beast. Everyone probably knows the rest of the history of Crowley. That's an interesting side note that I found with Aleister Crowley. But anyways, Darby had a Bible conference movement of 1870, and dispensationalism became hugely popular. This influenced Scofield to publish the Scofield Reference Bible in 1909. And there were different sections. There was an open and exclusive groups of Darbyites, and they split up, but they all taught the creature rapture, and Darby is considered a father of dispensationalism. But dispensation is the foundation of the pre-tribulation rapture belief, and they say that God dealt with Israel for 69 weeks of years, and that the 70th week, which is the future, is a seven-year tribulation period. The tribulation period is called Daniel's 70th week. It's also referred, and we talked about this before, the time of Jacob's trouble, because it is believed that the plagues are directed towards Israel in order to get them to repent and accept Christ. Darby believed that the church age is a parenthesis between the 69th and 70th weeks of Daniel 9:25-27, that there would be a preacher rapture of believers from earth to heaven by Christ before the 70th week, which is the Great Tribulation period. So all dispensationalists were and are premillennialists, but not all premillennialists are dispensationalists.
Okay.
Scofield introduced the preacher rapture into the American church here in America about the beginning of the 20th century with the Scofield Reference Bible. So again, in 1870s, there was a series of Bible conferences that spread the beliefs of the preacher rapture and dispensationalism in America. And in Niagara, there was something called the Niagara Bible Conferences that met from 1883 to 1897. And it became hugely popular, dispensationalism. Again, they believe there's different dispensations throughout history. There's different time periods with the seven churches in the Book of Revelation. And Scofield lived from 1843 to 1921. He studied under a man named James Brooke, who was the main leader of the Niagara Bible Conferences. Scofield later served in Dwight L. Moody's church in 1885, but returned to Dallas, Texas in 1902. Around 1900 to 1903, he began his work on his reference Bible. There's a man named Gabelin Arnold, A.C. Gabelin. He helped him to get financial backing for the publication of the Bible. Scofield began to work on his reference Bible in 1903 after he and his friend Gabelin had secured financial backing to enable Scofield to drop most of his pastoral duties and spend almost full time on a project. Some of his financial backers were Lyman Stewart from Union Oil, California, Francis Fitch, who was a member of the Plymouth Brethren.
Okay.
He was the head of a printing company which printed in New York Stock Exchange list. There's some other leaders, Alan Ball Jr., John Buss, John T. Pyrie. This is explained in the book. So he finished his Bible, Scofield finished his Bible in 1908. In 1909, it was published by the Oxford University Press. It became popular in spreading dispensationalism and the preacher rapture in America, and Gabelin served as one of the editors. Now, John Darby is considered to be the father of dispensationalism, although it was believed that Augustine foreshadowed some of the elements of doctrine. Schofield has stated before so that each dispensation is a period of time during which man is tested in respect of obedience to some specific revelation of the will of God. And he set forth seven dispensations in God dealing with humans. And I won't go into great detail of what they are, but he believed that one is innocency, then you have conscience, human government, promise, law, grace, and then the kingdom, which has to do with the final rule of Christ in the millennium. So we're in the period of the grace, where God, the period that begins with the death and resurrection of Jesus, which is called the church age, and then there's supposed to be the seventh, which is coming. And it's been around basically in America for over, 100 years now, this doctrine, the preacher rapture, but it developed again in the 1800s. Another issue that they created, say that the early church followers and all arise before 1830 believed and taught the preacher rapture in imminency in order to have us believe that doctrine was in the church since the first century. And I explain this in the book. A lot of this is from Dave McPherson talking about they used the book called the Didache, which is teaching of the 12 apostles and how they believe that the preacher rapture taught them that, and how they're to use this guy named Pseudo Ephraim to say that he taught the preacher rapture. So if he taught it, then it's in the Bible. But that's really the big origins of the doctrine. It was from the vision of this girl, McDonald, and then Edward Irving came along and with his church, and then Darby came along and made it hugely popular with his belief of dispensationalism, and then Schofield spread it to America. So that's really the foundations of the 1800s, how that got started, the pre-tribulate rapture doctrine.
It's all fascinating stuff, Rob, and I wish we had another hour to discuss this, but I think for today we're going to have to wind it up. But you know what? Let's do another one of these broadcasts very soon. And okay. I'm about halfway through the questions that I had for you, so I think even without much preparation, we can do another show very quickly here now. So maybe next week we can get together again over the phone and talk about the fact that I know that, in personal phone calls before, we talked about the fact that in the Left Behind series, his name is slipping my mind at the moment, but the famous star from the television series there.
Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, I understand now that he is not a believer in the pre-trib rapture, even though he starred in all of these Hollywood-style movies about this.
He actually changed his beliefs. I heard that he was listening to a church, because he's out in Southern California, and he listened to a pastor, and the pastor believes in what I believe, post-trib rapture, and he was listening to that, a sermon about that and persecution, Christians undergoing persecution and, being prepared physically and spiritually. And he told the pastor that, "I learned a lot from you, and I come to the conclusion that we're not going to be raptured. We're going to be here during the tribulation period, and it's going to be a post-trib rapture." So, Kirk Cameron over time changes.
As we all should, as we all learn what the truth is, so. Anyway, Rob, I'd like to thank you for being with me here today on the Hour of the Time, and let's get the next broadcast set up very quickly.
Okay.
So once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in getting this book, I would highly recommend getting it, because, Rob isn't interested in giving you a date for the rapture like Harold Camping or something like that. It's not one of those books at all. This book is a very well-researched piece looking pretty much in-depth at what the Bible teaches about the timing of the rapture. And it's not, once again, I say it's not about Rob predicting when the rapture is going to happen. Rob cites a bunch of contemporary authors that we've talked about today, religious teachers throughout history, and Rob shows why this rapture doctrine originated, where it originated, and he details the reason why this belief is so widely held in a lot of Christian churches. So it's not Rob's intent to actually determine the exact date and time when the rapture will occur. But, Rob's looking to show us a thoroughly researched document here, a good, well-referenced timeline. And Rob concludes that this shows a post-tribulation timing of the rapture. So once again, Rob, thank you for being with me here today, and look forward to having you here again next week.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Okay, thank you.